This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. Set-top boxes have long been looked at, theoretically at least, as single-purpose devices that would do nicely as digital signage media players. But it's fair to say a lot of software company developer and support teams have painful memories of trying to use consumer devices from China as Android-based players. They weren't reliable in terms of performance, or even in terms of what showed up from shipment to shipment. So what if a company that was expressly in the business of commercial-grade set-top boxes for the pay TV and cable markets got into digital signage? That's the deal with a UK company called Amino, which now has two lines of business, pay TV and pro AV applications like digital signage. These are devices that are engineered to last 4 or 5 or 6 years, and in a lot of cases, they're happily ticking away for a decade and longer. High reliability and remote management are inherent in the product design, so meeting that common pro AV demand was largely automatic. I had a good chat with Rowan Brunger, Amino's UK-based sales director, about the hardware, how the company goes to market, and what's involved if software companies and solutions providers want to add Amino devices as a hardware option. Rowan, thank you for joining me. I bumped into you last year and basically said, what do you guys do? Because I'd never heard of you. And we'd intended to do a podcast and finally got around to it. So for those people who don't know the company, what are you all about?
Thanks, David, and thanks for having me on. Great to be here. We are a company called Amino, and we have been around for about 25 years. So we have two sides to our business. Primarily, we've been a set-top box manufacturer within the pay TV world. And in the last few years, we've made a move to expand our enterprise TV and digital signage side of the business, which is rapidly growing some momentum. Mm-hmm. In terms of those 25 years we've been around, we've probably got circa 25 million devices in circulation, and we've got quite a compelling device management system that we've tweaked from our experience in the pay TV world. Mm-hmm. And brought over to the Pro AV arena for managing estates of media devices.
So when you say pay TV, you basically, in the context of what North Americans would understand, that basically means cable TV?
Yeah, cable TV. So tier one, tier two satellite providers, mm-hmm. Where we would typically either have an Amino box or we'd OEM a box for the actual operator. Mm-hmm. So we're used to selling in big numbers to operators. And what really differentiated us in that market, which we're using in this one, is the remote device management. So as you can imagine, if we're sending hundreds of thousands of boxes out, we want it to be relatively zero touch from mm-hmm. the consumer's environment. We want them to plug the cables in and we do the rest remotely. So that's really what spawned our Orchestrate product, which is our device management platform that we've tweaked and made more applicable to the Pro AV market to manage our media players.
When you opened up the digital signage / enterprise TV market, was that based on inbound requests saying, hey, we would really like to use a set-top box, do you support this market? Or did it may be multiple answers, but I'm curious if you kind of looked at where linear TV or cable TV was going, given streaming and the way that was bubbling up, and realized, okay, we need to open up a new market.
I guess a combination of the various different scenarios you've given there. I mean, it's key to say we've always had a foot within the digital signage and enterprise video world. There's Amino products that have been out there sort of 10 years plus. I guess one of the main alliances partners we had in the past was Triple Play. Mm-hmm. So we manufactured a lot of the endpoints for Triple Play, Vitek, and some of the IPTV streaming guys. So we've got loads of boxes out there in circulation, and they're coming up to renewal, or people are wanting to upgrade to 4K, etc. So that gives us a natural pull of, okay, let's look at this market in isolation rather than just bolting it onto our existing business. Mm. And then there's actually looking at the experience that we've gained in the pay TV world, which has become a very competitive environment to be in. And we can take a lot of that experience and truly add some value within the Pro AV space with the gravitas of products and devices that we've managed previously. And importantly, bringing over our video expertise onto the media player, rather than just looking at signage. You know, we've done well where we integrate the two, and we're finding a lot of customers are wanting both of them to run side by side on one device. So we can pull the huge expertise we have in enterprise video and actually put it on the same device next to, for instance, a CMS platform.
Mm-hmm. The markets are, and the use cases are in some respects very, very similar in terms of, both need very, very high quality of service. Like, the stuff can't go down, right?
Sure. Yeah. And we look at that from a number of different angles. In terms of the physical player itself, it's truly enterprise grade, steel case designed to work in all environments 24/7. And some would argue we've even over-engineered it. I mean, we've literally got boxes that have been running 24/7 in the field for 10 or 12 years solid. And they're still displaying every single hour of the day. Mm-hmm. But then there's the actual total robustness of the system, and that's the ability, inevitably, when something does go wrong, and things obviously do go wrong, the ability to fix that very quickly, and also the ability to make sure the ongoing security and updates mm-hmm. of that device are easy to get onto it, is as important as it running, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say any number of CMS software companies in the industry have only in the last few years sort of realized the importance of remote device management, whereas it would have been inherent in what you do right from the start, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely an upfront thought in where we've come from. And inevitably, like a lot of things, you only realize how much you need something when you don't have it, mm-hmm. And when there's a problem. So certainly a lot of the signage projects that we're involved with, it's not their first signage project at all. They're learning from the deployments they've already made and what the pinch mm-hmm. points were and what the pain, you know, what the really painful bits about it. And I think we're in a world now where people are taking their signage a lot more seriously. Mm-hmm. with a big emphasis and cost push to get people back to the high street, for instance, when we're looking at retail. It's not just a tick box, we have a signage system in place. It's got to be absolutely robust. You've got to be able to rely on it. And certainly in times where people are paying to have their content advertised within these stores or these settings, they want to know it's actually been on the screen.
Mm-hmm. So you're competing in a few ways with different kinds of companies. You've got the consumer / prosumer Android set-top boxes that, you know, come over from Shenzhen or whatever. You've got special purpose media playout boxes like a BrightSign box, and then you've got companies like Spinetics who have their own box, and other companies that have their own boxes, and then you have PCs. So How do you kind of position yourself?
It's a really good question. If I cover the first section earlier on, I'd probably include mm-hmm. system on chip in that as well. We've got system on chip users, people that have realized there's value in having a player, but maybe not have necessarily selected one that hits all their objectives, shall we say. And then we've got, you know, the likes of the guys that do really high-end boxes with multiple outputs. And we've liked to keep this really, really simple. That we have two products in our portfolio, for instance. We have a PoE model and we have a Wi-Fi model. So we keep it really, really simple. It's at a price point where we're stretching the people from the cheap consumer devices and the system on chip operators, but add enough value to make that extra investment to move towards an enterprise grade player. But we're underneath a lot of our true competitors that, you know, do fit for purpose signage players, because we don't try and do everything. So I'll give you an example of that. We like to partner with specialists in areas that aren't familiar to us. So if somebody needs a four output player, we've got a partnership with the likes of Matrox to give you that. So those guys specialize in multiple output cards and players. We feed into it. But what that gives the customer is one platform for pretty much whatever they want to do. So our device management and the reliability is right up there with the top end competitors. But we've got a really simplistic view. And what our customers like is, no matter what they're displaying or what they're using the player for, it's the same player that does it all. So we've got one customer that has probably six use cases for our player within their stores. It's a large rollout of about 650, 700 stores in the UK. And they're doing multiple things with it, but they know it's a H200 player that is just programmed in different ways for those different use cases. And they really like that from a maintenance point of view. So we've kept things really simple. We're definitely a step up and a professional grade player to challenge the lower end operators in the market. And in terms of the higher end guys, I think we're hitting a price point they can't. So we can get mass adoption from our product, and we've got the right partnerships in place to cover all use cases with the guys that lead the industry in those areas.
Right. So for a the H200 player, if I'm buying, I don't know, like 10 of them, what roughly in US dollars would be the cost?
I'm just doing a conversion in my head.
give me EU or sterling.
So we've got a package to the trade within Europe that's about £240.
Okay.
So what are we at? Just over $300, and that's a full 2-year package of enhanced support, our premium device management software, and the player itself. The player itself is around about $200 on its own,
right?
With various different options.
Okay.
So yeah. it hits a price point. If you're wanting to power four screens, for instance, in a video wall, it actually becomes price. It prices itself well that you could actually put a player on each of those screens, run it as a video wall, or run them individually, and have that flexibility. So you're not just doing one or the other. Yet you're still coming in at probably less than a quad head player that would power four screens.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting, by standardizing on just like one box for a whole bunch of different use cases, you could keep a spares pool without having to think, okay, I need two spares of these and two spares of those and so on. You just have like five in the shelf that you can pull off if you need to.
Exactly that. I mean, the scenario I just gave you before, they're even looking at running just some simple audio or some simple HTML pages, just because they like the simplicity that everything is powered by exactly the same thing.
You mentioned that you've had stuff in the field for 10 years. Do you have like a rated operating life?
The chipset has changed, which has sort of adapted that slightly, and then you've obviously got the provisions of using flash memory, but the products that we have in the field have normally been programmed to do one thing from the offset, so quite often decoding video streams, so they haven't really been updated, and that's why they're running sort of 10 or 12 years plus. They're designed and warranted to run for, you know, the standard sort of 5 or 6 years, but they've become so robust that people have just left them in because they're working.
Right.
We've got an airport with 2,000 of the units in, and it's only because they want to change to full grade that they even thought about upgrading them. They've been running in excess of 10 years in that airport.
Huh. So with the build that for these units, if I have, you know, 500 of them, and I decide, okay, I'm expanding, I'm an airport, I'm expanding a new terminal, I need 500 more. Is it going to be a different box at this point, or would that even matter?
If the H200's been around for about 2 years now, so it really depends on when those proxies were deployed. Mm-hmm. But the older boxes that we have in the sort of thousands out there, aren't supported anymore because they're well over 10 years old, but we've got a very easy upgrade path to swap those boxes out for the new range of products.
Right.
And in doing that, they're all on the same platform for managing them then as well.
Right. I asked this because one of the complaints among probably quite a few complaints with buying little Android boxes from Shenzhen or elsewhere is that if you order 100 of them and then you order another 100, that second batch of 100 might have different operating system or different version of the operating system, different electronics inside, everything else. So there's every time they show up, you're starting from scratch.
Absolutely. Welcome to buying consumer product. We manage our chipsets and our components very, very strictly. And you can imagine the volumes we make them in, because there's a lot of crossover from the set-top box side of the business. But more importantly, we operate Android AOSP. So we actually control and write the firmware for the product ourselves. So in terms of updating the products, it's our own firmware we're putting on there. We're not relying on Google or Android updates for anything. In fact, much the opposite, because we want to be in control of it. So for instance, when you boot one of our boxes up, there's no App Store, there's no standard Google browser on there. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what we choose to put on there, which makes it very fit for purpose, because it's not running a million things in the background. We give it some very, very clear INI parameters and control exactly what middleware or APK that we put on there that's monitored centrally, and all the versions and updates are controlled centrally as well. So you know exactly what's on there, and you're master of your own destiny.
For over a decade, ScreenFeed has been the reliable choice for beautifully designed, licensed content such as news and weather. We handle over 27 million requests a day to deliver dynamic content to 200,000 screens across the globe. Now, we bring you ScreenFeed Connect, a no-code solution that makes complex content projects easy. Projects that used to take our designers and developers weeks became a to-do we could complete before lunch. The easy-to-use browser-based tool leverages pre-built data connections and ready-made widgets to give you the power to design with data. Create team member profiles, schedules, tenant directories, progress boards, featured products, or anything that leverages your data. Discover how Connect empowers you to complete projects faster at screenfeed.com.
Are you having to worry about security? Well, I guess everybody worries about security, but because it's, as you just described, does that kind of greatly reduce the risks?
Yeah, it does. And again, this is something we've pulled over from our knowledge of the pay TV market. So working with Android, we adhere to some pretty strict guidelines from Google in terms of security patches and timely updates, etc. And we've actually think that's very relevant in the Pro AV market as well. So we've actually pulled over the standards that we adhere to on the pay TV market within the digital signage space. So as a result of that, we do at least 4 firmware updates a year. Mm-hmm. That contains all the relevant security patches. Because there's nothing else on there in terms of an app store, etc., we're cleared in very high secure environments. So we do a lot of work with the government. We've got a really interesting project at the moment going on within a prison. So we're actually, somebody's made their own middleware that they're using on the box and actually running entertainment within prison cells using the H200. which you can imagine is a super secure environment. So mm-hmm. because we're in complete control of it, we can make it as secure as we like, really. And we're seeing that more and more prevalent with even retail rollouts now, with things like 802.1x authentication on networks, mm-hmm. which I've never heard asked for, but been asked quite a lot for it recently. So we've got quite an agile development team. We're able to add functions like that and drop them in the latest firmware and get them out to the boxes very quickly.
So because you're shipping a lot of units, do you get some sense of what the marketplace demand is? Like, for the longest time, people were saying, yes, it would be nice if we went to 4K, but nobody actually needs it yet. And for signage applications, it's probably never needed. Certainly 8K, which is being marketed, is something that is probably years away if it ever comes. What is the marketplace actually using?
We are being asked for 4K a lot more. Mm-hmm. You're right, in the signage space, less applicable, although it's a lot of the CMS providers don't even output in 4K, which obviously is a stumbling block. But those that do, we're just in the testing of a build for 4K content at the moment that we've got out with some beta testers that's going very well. Obviously, 4K video is pretty much a must when people are looking at video, and that's very much our expertise and how we can stream that and what protocols we use to stream it and transport streams and encryption is all around 4K. And in particular, low latency is something that we specialize in quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So that takes us down certain vertical markets such as sporting and gaming, where latency is an absolute, you know, deal breaker. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing for our players, and going back to your question about market trends, I'd say 50% of our opportunities are video led, and the other 50% are signage led, but with an element of video. A lot of them are with an element of video as well. So I think our expertise in video is really setting us apart here, and that is down the 4K route. PoE has been requested more and more, so that's why it's standard on our H2
for retail
device.
More than anything, I would imagine.
No. I thought it would be, but what we're seeing is the request for Wi-Fi is actually coming through retail more than anywhere else, because when people are doing a retrofit of a store, or they're wanting to have quite an agile space within the store and be creative with where they're putting the screens, there's not normally a network point there.
Okay.
So we're actually finding some of our big retail rollouts are actually going down the Wi-Fi route, which I didn't expect, to be honest. But we've done a separate Wi-Fi unit for that marketplace, because leading back to the security, a lot of our government and military deployments require us not to even have the ability to have Wi-Fi in the box altogether. Mm-hmm. So, which is why we didn't just add Wi-Fi to the existing H200. We've actually done it as two separate products. But yeah, we're just in the process of launching our Wi-Fi unit, and the inquiries that are coming in are predominantly retail, and also the leisure industry as well, as people want to put more screens and things in bars and pubs that typically have terrible infrastructure. Wi-Fi seems to be the easiest route to go with that as well.
You mentioned streaming. I'm a little curious about that, because most of the set-top boxes are on the market that they have onboard storage, and digital signage most typically is kind of forward and store and play off of a hard drive locally. Are your boxes doing that, or is it all streaming?
No, it's all streaming. So we can digest a number of transport streams such as multicast, unicast, low latency dash, low latency HLS, because that's what our bread and butter is on the set-top box side of the world. We're finding a lot of people so for instance, within the betting industry, where low latency is an absolute must, we're working with specific middleware vendors that provide the streams on an OTT basis, and we decode them locally on the box with various different levels of encryption, and it's enabling people to reduce the amount of head-end hardware that they've got. even down to sort of office builds and government buildings where there's an element of wanting just some basic maybe news channels alongside their signage, the ability to switch between the two. So typically you'd have a big head end consumer set-top box with aerial on the roof, bringing those streams down. We're able to bring them in completely OTT, so we remove the need for all of that hardware. Mm-hmm. And just bring it on an OTT basis straight to the box, which is game changing for, you know, somebody that's maybe got a large estate and they're having to rent aerial space on the roof of all their stores, have a big server unit within there, consuming a lot of power, needing managing, and obviously bringing those streams down locally. We literally just pop the addresses into the box, into a JSON file, and we pull them down through our player that's on board within the software stack.
Are there worries at all about the quality of service and reliability of service for connectivity? Because God knows that used to be an issue, but maybe it's gone away.
It's becoming less of an issue because with different encryptions, transport streams, they require a lot less bandwidth. Mm-hmm. It still needs assessing, obviously, when you're looking at a site, but you know, you can tweak the bitrate frames between the different encryption levels to get to a happy medium of a quality that you want alongside mm-hmm. a bandwidth that you're willing to play with. So it's becoming less of an issue. We can still obviously decode on-prem feeds as well mm-hmm. When it's absolutely paramount that the feeds have got to be on-premise. But the bandwidth is becoming less and less of an issue now. Okay. So definitely, yeah.
You mentioned enterprise TV at the front end of our chat. How do you define that?
So it's really whether it's TV-led. And what I mean by enterprise TV is anything that's not residential mm-hmm. And not hospitality. Okay. So retail, office environments, sports stadia, things like that. That's where we'd class as enterprise TV. So it's an enterprise grade of box, but it's primarily streaming IPTV mm-hmm. Rather than just signage.
Do you sell direct or do you kind of go through a channel or through like software partners?
So we sell purely through a channel. Mm-hmm. We sell through distributors around the globe. Trade only through the channel directly mm-hmm. to our system integrators onto the end users. So yeah, we're a channel focused business, and that's something that we've recently sort of redesigned because that model is very different to what Amino is used to in the pay TV market mm-hmm. where they may deal directly with operators. We've decided that within this marketplace a channel only focus is the best way to go. It ensures our partners protection on pricing and margin, etc., and also gives us scalability that we've got partners out there promoting the product for us.
When you started looking at the digital signage market, was it a little baffling when you realized how many software companies there are?
Yes, there does seem to be an ever-ending amount of CMS partners to play with. We've worked with a couple that we've got history with mm-hmm. And onboarded those guys, and we've now got a accreditation process. So when we do onboard a partner, we truly onboard them as a partnership rather than just saying, okay, we've tested that version of the APK and that works fine, let's call it accredited. Mm-hmm. We actually onboard them and make a commitment that CMS will work ongoing with Amino, and we go into a partnership with the CMS, so we get beta releases of each other's software, so we can truly test it in advance. Mm-hmm. Which is why it takes a little bit of time to onboard, although we have quite an impressive list of CMS vendors on the list to go through accreditation. So it is definitely a nice route to market. We want to play with as many people as we can, at the same time not overloading ourselves. I think what's helping us there is the fact that a lot of CMSs seem to develop their APK before other platforms. Mm-hmm. So we do tend to be able to onboard people fairly quickly. And if there is any integration work that needs doing. It's fairly straightforward, and we've seen it before on somebody else's application. Onboarding and partnering is absolutely key for us over the next 12 months. We don't want what CMS somebody uses to be a barrier to sell. And it's not just the CMS. We work very closely with a number of streaming middleware companies as well, right, that are specific in certain vertical markets as well.
So you're at a stand at some trade show, and a CMS, digital signage CMS software company, walks up and says, "Hi, I'm aware of you guys. Would like to be involved." And what's that thing you tell them when they say, what do we need, or how do we need to be set up in order for this to work?
So initially, we would ask for a version of their application and a login to their system. And we deliberately ask for no more than that, because we want to test it as a virgin user, if you like. So we put it through a first round of testing, which is, does this go onto the box? Does it behave as if I would expect it to behave as a user? And that's our first round of testing. Normally, if that goes okay, we put it forward towards a full QA test with our Hong Kong development team, which is a 400-point QA test, which literally tests every element of the software and the integration. And at that point, we give a report back to the CMS provider to say, yes, it's all gone smoothly, or there's it works, but can we suggest we do this and this integration together to make it a better experience? And then we go into the commercials of the partnership and making sure that we're sharing best practice with each other in terms of updates and things. We also have a lot of APIs that are available through our remote management software that we're finding a lot more of the CMS partners are wanting to integrate into their CMS platform to give the end users that one pane of glass, whether they're measuring, whether they're managing content or the device, that they can do it in one place. So we have completely open APIs for the CMS partners to be able to do that and put a lot of the functionality that we have in our device management actually in their front end system that the customer is using every day for the content.
Right. But are you asking them, does your platform support IP streaming or multicast or that sort of thing? Is there like a foundational thing they have to have?
No, not at all. We are dealing with some partners to put our video play technology within their CMS, but it's not these guys' expertise. So actually the value to them with working with Amino is you can run their CMS software and switch seamlessly into an IPTV solution.
Okay.
Alongside their CMS. So all of a sudden they can speak to their customers about IPTV streaming solutions alongside pretty much any CMS, rather than having to have a specialized solution that incorporates
putting
both
on their roadmap
together. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And how many times have we provided screens to somebody and you get the call, maybe two weeks later, 2 years later, can we put some TV streams through this? For us, that's just a service we can turn on without having to ship any hardware. So, it gives a lot of flexibility to these existing CMS deployments that are out there.
You mentioned Hong Kong software team. Is that where the company's based?
No, we're based in Cambridge in the UK.
Oh, okay.
So we're a UK-based company, have been for our existence. We have a couple of support teams. One is in Portugal. Level one support is in Portugal, and we have a level two support team in Hong Kong. So we've got a follow the sun kind of coverage on support. Mm-hmm.
And manufacturing is done in China, like everybody else?
Some manufacturing is done in China. There's a whole host of countries that we manufacture in. We've got stuff coming out of Thailand, Taiwan, Hong Kong. Depends on the product, or the chipset, but yeah, a fairly well diverse manufacturing plant. We're not stationed all in one place.
What's the next AV trade show that you guys have a stand at or a presence at?
So Infocom coming up. We've got presence there, and we've just done IEC. as you know.
Yep.
And then we've got some presence at NAB as well, because we do see some crossover from some of the broadcasting shows that are looking at enterprise video or signage. Mm-hmm. So our trade show calendar is split still between pay TV, but with a lot larger emphasis than we have done on the AV world.
Right. Okay. All right. If people want to know more about Amino, where do they find you online?
Sure. Just go to amino.tv.
Clever. All right, Roland, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, David. Pleasure as always.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 169 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 169 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 169, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 169 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 169, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house, located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.